Steerforth Press presents Mississippi Swindle, Brett Favre and the Welfare Scandal That Shocked America, written by Shad White and narrated by Eric Berger. To my children and the Mississippi they deserve. Author's note: this book is based on my own memory of events. Memories are fallible, but my memory is pretty good and is well supported by documentation and evidence. There will be some who lie and say what happened did not. I suspect those people will be the ones most embarrassed about their role in the scheme I recount in the following pages. The credit for everything written here goes to the 140 men and women of the Mississippi Office of the State Auditor. They were the ones who stared at endless PDFs of documents, extracted information from interviewees, and pieced together the puzzle of the DHS, Department of Human Services scandal. I have the honor of telling you what they did. Introduction. My cell phone buzzed in the empty passenger seat next to me. My family, my wife, our infant daughter, and her car seat and I were traveling in our bright orange Jeep to Florida, where I was slated to give a speech to a group of accountants. It was June 2019. Glancing down at my phone, I could see that I had several missed messages. The most recent notification was a voicemail from my office saying the governor of Mississippi was looking for me. He'd been calling my desk phone. It was important. I serve as the state auditor of Mississippi. It's an elected position atop a state agency of 140 people. Our mission is to ensure that Mississippi's public money is spent legally. We do this by conducting routine audits, and if there is an allegation that funds have been stolen, we investigate. When we find a thief, we work with prosecutors to convict them. It's similar to the FBI's role for the federal government, except our jurisdiction covers only theft of taxpayer money. None of the heart-racing excitement of anti-terrorism or counterintelligence work for us. We employ lawyers, career law enforcement officers who specialize in white-collar crime, accountants, a network intrusion specialist, a fancy way of saying hacker, and support staff. It wasn't unheard of for the governor to call me with a question, but it was unusual for his office to dial me repeatedly until he got an answer. There aren't many auditing emergencies. It was also unusual that he did not call directly from his cell phone to mine. Because he'd been trying to call my office line, my secretary was leaving me messages about his persistence. The fact that the governor was calling from his government desk phone to my government desk phone suggested that he wanted an official record of the call to exist. I called Governor Bryant back. Phil Bryant was a colorful two-term governor known for his southern twang and for wearing cowboy boots with the state seal on them to even the most formal of events. He was popular in part due to his visceral connection with rural voters and in part because of the seriousness with which he took recruiting businesses to the state. "I need to turn a matter over to your office," Bryant said, more formal than normal for him. But Governor Bryan had previously served as Mississippi State Auditor, so he understood the gravity of our work. Over the next few minutes, Bryan described an encounter he had just had with an informant from the Mississippi Department of Human Services, DHS. DHS is the agency in Mississippi that disperses funds from federal programs like temporary assistance for needy families, TANF, commonly known as welfare. In a state like Mississippi, with our high poverty rate, tens of millions of dollars flowed through the agency every year, and in Mississippi, the governor selected the head of DHS. Governor Bryant said the informant had approached his office demanding a meeting. The informant brought a short, one-page document he called an internal audit. As the governor described the contents of the document, I could tell the allegations were serious. They involved corruption by DHS's director. The phone crackled when Governor Bryan reached the meat of the allegations. I looked up to see that our Jeep was passing through Alabama's George Wallace Tunnel, a thick white ceramic tile passage taking cars under the Mobile River, and the cell phone connection dropped. The pressure change inside the tunnel turned the rumbling sound of the traffic into a quiet whoosh. As a kid, my parents and I would hold our breath when we were passing through, seeing if we could make it to the other side without exhaling. Now the air in my lungs felt bottled up against my will. "Put the phone down while you're driving," my wife said. Sorry, this one is important, I replied. I redialed Bryant once we emerged from under the river, the gray battleship USS Alabama greeting us from the harbor outside the tunnel's mouth. Bryant picked up and finished the story. His informant claimed there was a kickback scheme involving DHS Director John Davis. Looks like Davis is paying some vendor, Restore LLC, for some kind of contract. The checks for the company are going back to a P.O. box owned by Davis in his hometown, said Bryant. Doesn't look good. DHS had paid a few $1,000s in 2019 to a company called Restore LLC. It was alarming to see a contractor to an agency being paid at a post office box owned by the head of that agency. But if Davis wanted a kickback for giving Restore an agency contract, why set up a P.O. box in his own name to receive the checks? It seemed like a careless paper trail to leave. Why not be paid in cash? Cash payments make kickback schemes hard to detect. Why wouldn't Davis just steal the checks from the office, I wondered aloud. Save the trouble of mailing them. As DHS director, Davis would have access to every physical space in his agency and could have easily put his hands on the checks before they were mailed. And why have physical checks sent to yourself if you can't deposit them? Sounds like the checks are made out to Restore, whoever that is. Regardless of the questions, I agreed with the governor that the situation was suspicious. Bryant closed the call by expressing concern for Davis. Davis was an odd man. As our jeep zoomed over marshy tidelands, shoots of green springing from the water, I reflected on our first encounter just a few months earlier. At the time, DHS's financial records were unclear and scant. My staff was concerned about how DHS was handling welfare money. The staff suggested that I talk to Davis and recommend he hire an outside CPA firm to do a dollar-by-dollar audit of their TANF spending. My auditors thought we did not have the staff on hand to do this ourselves, but they assured me that Davis could pay for an outside audit from his ample budget. I'd called Davis, set a time for the meeting, and driven to his office alone. The office's appearance surprised me. DHS had taken over a lease previously held by one of Mississippi's wealthier law firms. The wall paneling and advanced security system were unlike anything I'd seen in any other state government office. I would later find out that back in Davis's private office, he'd purchased a couch for tens of thousands of dollars and worked at an Italian desk. Plans were in the works to install high-tech glass walls that frosted when you touched them. At one point, they even intended to build a shower in Davis's office that could be entered from either his office or the office next door, which seemed beyond strange. It didn't fit, knowing that DHS's mission was to serve the poor. Davis's demeanor also struck me. He was a career DHS employee who'd advanced from small-town social worker to the boss, now a paunchy balding man with a penchant for flashy ties and decor. With his thick southern accent, he slathered on praise, flattering me to the point of making me uncomfortable. Davis had a team ready to meet me when I entered his conference room. He did everything to signal he was eager to listen and take any recommendations I had. I walked him through why he should contract for a private audit of his books. He agreed on the spot. DHS would hire a CPA firm to take a look at how they'd spent their TANF dollars. They would ensure they were complying with all the relevant laws, he said. That audit never happened. And now, a few months later, driving away from the Alabama sunset into Florida, I was told Davis might have stolen some of that money. Governor Bryant was worried that if Davis had indeed stolen money and realized an informant squealed, he might stick a pistol in his mouth over the weekend. I shared that concern. During my time in office, another person accused of embezzling funds had confessed, scrawled a note on a pad, and then shot himself in the head before his trial date arrived. I also wondered if Davis might start destroying important documents. The proof of a kickback might be doused in gasoline and burning in a 5-gallon drum behind his house right now. I'll get right on it, I said. I hung up and dialed Richie McCluskey, the man I trusted most on white-collar investigations. I'd hired Richie to run the investigations division of my office right after I'd taken my position. Richie was a square-jawed fireball of energy and red hair. He spent his career in law enforcement, starting as a beat cop, attending the FBI Academy in Quantico, and then working as the lead consumer protection investigator in the Mississippi Office of the Attorney General. While there, he'd successfully investigated some of Mississippi's civil rights cold cases. When I started my search for a chief investigator, Richie was home on early...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?